My name's Richard Mosley, the head of Universum's Global Employer Branding Academy, and I'd like to introduce you to our new 8-week course. It's designed to provide you with all the guidance you need to succeed in employer branding today, and you'll be joining now over 500 alumni from some of the world's leading companies like P&G, IBM, Deloitte, as well as a wide range of other startup companies and many others who believe in the power of employer branding today. So we are kicking off in London on April the 17th. Would love to see you there. Please check it out.
Hey, son, Svesan. It's Jorgen Sundberg here with the Employer Branding Podcast by Link Humans, London's employer branding agency. Now, ask anyone to name a famous Dutch company, and the first and sometimes the only answer will be Philips. Next question, what does Philips actually do? Good question, and I will let this week's interviewee onto this one and many more. Let's start the show. Lisa Chaudier, goedemiddag.
Goedemiddag, Joachim.
Who are you and what do you do?
I lead the global employer brands and recruitment marketing team over at Philips. At this point in time, it consists of about 14 very brilliant minds based all around the world. So we have team members all the way from North America, LATAM, Europe, and different parts of Asia. So I'm privileged to lead that team. I have been with Philips just over 6 years now. Wow, time flies. Yeah. And within that capacity, have really built the first in-house employer brand capability for Philips. So started first in North America, and now we've scaled to be a global team, which has been quite the journey, and I'm sure we'll dive into that during our time together today. But I also am very much committed to advancing the employer brand profession at large. So I often serve as a consultant, speaker, thought leader, et cetera, within the space in my own time, having been in the field for about 12 years now.
Great. Right. So Philips, what does that company actually do nowadays? I know it's probably not washing machines or DVD players.
No, not TVs, not headphones, light bulbs anymore. Even a small private high school in Andover, Massachusetts, near our North America headquarters, people think that's Philips, but no. it really, in short, Philips today is purely a health technology company. We are focused on producing innovative software, products, services, solutions that improve people's health and well-being across what we call the health continuum. So everything from your overall wellness and prevention as a consumer, and then into areas like diagnosis, treatment, and recovery, and more of the professional health spaces further down the continuum.
So for a regular person, where would they interact, encounter with your products and services?
Yeah, in a lot of different ways. So they may encounter the Philips Avent, which is one of our lines in the fertility planning and pregnancy line, new mothers, which I am one of as well. So I use the Philips Avent products a lot. In hospitals, so ultrasound machines, MRI machines, when they're going through specific treatments. And even more recently, Philips has launched, for example, the first professional grade iWatch. So it's similar to an Apple Watch, but actually takes a person's actual health data and is able to monitor whether they're at risk of falling or having a heart attack. So anything related to kind of health, well-being, lifestyle, et cetera.
Great. And how did the company evolve into this? Because obviously Philips was doing a lot of different things. And talk us through it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, quite simply, we've evolved as the biggest needs of society have evolved. We got our start in the Netherlands in 1891, when at the time people just needed light to be able to work or live outside of the hours that the sun was shining. And then that progressed into today, where people just need and want access to better, more affordable healthcare and well-being options. And today, obviously, it's very much a digital world that we're operating in. So we've just, underlying everything we've done has been this drive to be the head of innovation where there is a way to make life better and so far as the needs that people and families have.
Great. Okay, so that's Philip. So tell us about the purpose of employer brand within the company. Why is it important to Philips?
Yeah, the million-dollar question.
No, that's the ROI question. We'll get to that one.
Well, as you can tell from the intro, we have a big awareness and understanding issue when it comes to our brand, our consumer brand as well as our employer brand. So part of our role is just to create the correct association for those considering career opportunities, either with us or not with us at this point. We are also a company, as many companies are these days, in transformation. So digital transformation, as you can see, kind of taking a much more significant stance in a definitive space like health tech. And as such, I mean, we're operating in some of the most competitive marketplaces when you look at it from a talent point of view. So when we're going after, you know, software professionals, Q&R professionals, to be able to execute our health tech strategy, our work is critical to differentiate Philips versus other companies competing for those profiles and essentially, you know, win them above all else. So, I mean, that's really what we're focused on in terms of differentiating Philips as an employer in the space. And I think what's special about employer brand at Philips, which has taken quite a long time to build, but others, you know, may or may not have as well, is the fact that Philips views our ability to attract talent as one of the strategic advantages and a strategic pillar within our strategy. It's not just about you know, talent being just a risk. It's more positioned as an opportunity for us to be able to have that competitive advantage and win from both a business and talent point of view.
Okay, well, that's really useful to flip it that way, and I'm sure the ROI calculation gets easier as well. Now, did an employer branding capability exist when you joined the company, or did you have to build it from scratch?
Yeah, it didn't exist internally in a formal sense. I mean, you certainly had recruiters, you know, on campus kind of doing some of their own marketing materials, or our corporate communications team would hire some agencies to do some work on EVP and so forth. But there really wasn't a true capability when I joined. When I joined, there was my boss at the time, we kind of had a vision of, let's see if we can build a true employer branding practice in one market. At the time, it was North America, and see if we can scale that. And soon after I joined, she was actually promoted into a global role. So that kind of journey became much more feasible. But it was, for me, a great opportunity. I kind of have always had this entrepreneur in me, kind of not quite yet on the risky entrepreneur path yet, but it was a nice opportunity to build a new team and new capability for Philips, which at the time didn't have it from a strategic and properly embedded sense.
Yeah, I mean, can you describe the journey? What was it like to build an employer brand capability for Philips?
Yeah, we started as just a small team. So I guess me, myself, and I at that time was the team. And just initially playing the role of developing an employer brand strategy. And at the time, it was a means to really just execute on our talent acquisition strategy more effectively. Now we're a bigger team that's actually influencing our global people strategy. So actually what the product is that we have to offer talent. So we've over time been able to evolve our impact to have a greater voice in the company. But the journey to get there, yeah, I mean, it's been a bit of a roller coaster, as you can imagine. They're, you know, challenging, of course, disheartening at times, very much fulfilling at other times. And above all, you know, there's no denying that the journey as a whole has been personally transformational for me. And one I would definitely encourage others to take on if they have the opportunity. You know, throughout having to build that voice and get the buy-in and get the support and get the resources, it's really tested my courage. It's pushed the boundaries of my, what I call my diplomacy skills. So, you know, deciding, you know, when to push and win the battles versus the war. But I would say it's been a really great case study of kind of resilience and learning and having that growth mindset.
Great. Okay. So you alluded to some challenges there. What if you were to pick three of the biggest challenges or hardest lessons that you've overcome along the way, what would they be?
Gosh, I can probably list 10, but I'll stick with your three. I would say definitely for me, it's been building the unwavering confidence and belief that what I do and what my team does matters. I think there's always that voice of self-doubt in our relatively new domain like this one, that it's, you know, should I have a seat at the table? What's my worth? Do people believe in what I do? And so I think for me, it was just cultivating that confidence that I didn't need external validation. It was a mindset that allowed me to break down, you know, barriers or overcome resistance. I think second is also probably a common one out there, which is resource management, right? How to constantly do more with less or better with the same amount of resources, whether it be dollars, you know, actual dollars in a budget or headcount or people or so forth. And I would say third is just keeping up, you know, winning in the insane marketplace that we're all operating in. You know, there's just, like I mentioned earlier, just hyper competition for the best candidates. We're operating in a world right now where there's just constant clutter of content. So how do we stand out? Rapidly changing technologies. I mean, you know, we're about 14 months in on an implementation of a new careers platform. And who knows, by the time we get done, it might be obsolete or there might be a new player in this space. So you're kind of constantly questioning, you know, how ahead of the game are you? And then, you know, the emergence of new career channels and some of which your engagement is forced. You know, brands create employee review pages that you then have to manage, but my resources don't scale to accommodate, you know, new channels in the middle of the year. So I think those would be the three if I had to pick three.
Great. Okay. So could you, if we look at your employee brand strategy, would you be able to describe it at a high level to us?
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. So quite simply, we have four pillars to our strategy. And then each of these are kind of verticals that you can imagine a number of, you know, projects and tactics that fall underneath. But essentially, we build an iconic employer brand for Philips around the world to enable our talent acquisition strategy. So enabling our talent acquisition strategy is pillar number two. By advancing our strategic and operational excellence and continuing to develop our people. So those are kind of the four areas that we focus on. The operating model that I've put in place for my team is now based on a 70-20-10 formula. So it used to be 80-20, but I've added in 10% innovation time. And what that means is 70% of the time, you know, we develop an annual strategy based on the company's priorities and we're really focused on execution. And 20% of the time, we're engaged as almost consultants, internal consultants or business partners, if business critical initiatives happen and where our expertise would be valuable. So in that 70%, that kind of always on program, we focus on developing and deploying, you know, employer brand content on key career channels. We determine what those are at a global and local level each year. So for example, in 2018, our global key career channels are our career website, of course, you know, LinkedIn, Glassdoor, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Google search, our talent CRM, our own employees as an important channel, voice to the market, and then select employer award publishers. This year, we've also included Instagram and Snapchat in our global key channel mix for our younger segments, and we're starting to do some experiments with content syndication platforms like Taboola and Outbrain to enable a much more content marketing focused approach to our work versus some of the traditional advertising tactics we've used in the past. All of that work and kind of the targeted campaigns that we do is each year we determine what the highest quality sources of talent are and are most critical to Philips business strategy. So priority segments this year, for example, are software professionals, solution selling professionals, Q&R, R&D, you know, campus and executives. And this year we're also branching out a little bit and focusing on the contingent freelancer population and select geographies for the first time. So actually going to direct source those people, which it's very different what they're looking for in a career than a long-term, you know, full-time professional. Which is exciting. And then I would say, you know, some examples of that 20% I spoke about would be that we're often brought into as consultants on M&A, so mergers and acquisitions, integration. We've been buying up a lot of smaller software tech companies and integrating those. So the question is, you know, how do we leverage Philips employer brands and our EVP effectively in those situations? We have to start recruiting for those smaller companies. Large scale location shifts. So if we're looking to open new offices and new locations, establish awareness in new markets. So those are some things where we'll be brought in to kind of ad hoc work through solution design and execution on.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Really interesting stuff around freelancers and you know, how to approach the employer brand for people who are sort of attached to the organization, but they're kind of running their own, maybe little business as well. Could you describe some scenarios where Philips would choose to work with freelance talent as opposed to hiring people?
Yeah, we're taking a look at it through the lens of what we call total workforce demand management, right? And what that means is, in any given situation where you need to acquire a skill or capability, what is that right channel? Is it a freelancer? Is it an agency? Is it a full-time employee? And for so long, Philips, as well as other companies, the way that they look at resources has been quite siloed. So do I really need a full-time hire if it's for a year-long project, right? That becomes counterproductive if you're then going to have to manage that person out a year down the road. But some examples, you know, even within our team, I'll give an example. You know, we have some niche content concepts that we want to experiment with, one of which is a podcast, ironically, that we just launched our first podcast earlier this month, which was exciting. And we didn't have expertise, you know, legacy expertise in that area. So we engaged a freelancer to help us with that project. But it wasn't something that, you know, we were confident that we would need someone full time with that capability. And we see those examples, you know, in all areas of our business as well.
Yeah, it's interesting that the company I used to work for, it was a recruitment agency, staffing firm in the SAP space, SAP. And we would place SAP consultants or SAP freelancers working for Philips. I remember it was somewhere in the north of the Netherlands, but they were on those projects for years and years, because I think in that case, it was actually Philips just couldn't find permanent staff that could do these things, because it was such cutting edge skills at the time. I think nowadays it's different, but yeah, there's so many scenarios.
Exactly. And I want to say, I feel it's the market's shifting, where it's not even so much driven from the employer side as millennials start to make up a greater portion of the workforce. They don't have the same preferences of wanting to just be tied to one employer. It's becoming more, I see more and more, you know, when people get to a certain level in their career, they start to own their brand and they want to share that in whatever way they want, and typically with the most amount of flexibility. And so, whereas I think typically in a traditional sense, contingent workers or freelancers were viewed as either A, you know, people who were struggling to find full-time employment and you know, kind of wanted that, was using it as a transition into a more full-time role, or people with very niche skill areas that, you know, had chosen that path. And now I think you start to see a better quality and more strategic choices around why someone would want to be a freelancer or a contingent worker as an intentional career path.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Okay, so if, look at budget. So working for a big company now with a global team in place, how big is your budget to execute this strategy?
Not as big as you'd think, or that I would like to be able to say, especially relative to the scope that I just shared. You know, without getting into actual dollar, or should I say euro amounts, as we operate on, I'll say that we have to be very scrappy and super creative in everything that we do. If I look at it on paper, it's funny, every year when I do the budgeting, I'm like, there's no way that we have enough to cover all of these, you know, target audience segments with strong campaign solutions and do the always on stuff and do the ad hoc projects that we're being asked to. And when I look at it comparatively to our peers, you know, our marketing teams and other areas of the business, I'll say revenue generating parts of the business, I have only about 10% of what they have, and they only have about one or two target audience segments to impact. So it's pretty crazy. And I have worked with, and I have a lot of practitioners in the space who are like starting with zero. So I feel for them. We have a little more than that. But I think, you know, this year was the first year that I didn't get the dreaded email that says, we want you to do more of the same or more amazing work, but with 40% less money. And although our scope did increase this year with a flat budget, I suppose I was happy about that. It's all relative at this point, I suppose. But I think what I've learned is over time, you have to start, even if you do have whatever, $1,000 to work with, if over time you show what you can deliver with that $1,000, it starts to become, it starts a snowball effect. And eventually I'm hoping this is like the line in the sand where now we can start to build more of the business cases for more instead of just being happy with the same.
Okay, interesting. So what would be your top tricks or tips to share with other employer brand managers who might be listening to this right now, who are similarly challenged to manage, let's say, large scopes with relatively limited resources?
Yeah, I would say first and foremost, build a culture of collaboration without egos and without exception. This is something that is I hire and fire by, because to do what we need to do, there needs to be collaboration and relationship building happening at all angles. So within our own team, for example, you know, I need my Americas team to be sharing best practices with Asia. And if we all tackle a little, no one has to do a lot. So within our team, there can't be any sort of territorialism or isolation. That's kind of the obvious one. But also with other teams, being able to leverage resources from brand, from marketing, even with, I'll give you some examples and kind of my next point, with design, with whomever you have access to within your organization, if you get that relationship building piece right and have that spirit of collaboration, you can do a lot more with less financial dollars. The second thing I'll say is learn the rules of your organization and use them to your advantage. And that those are going to obviously be different for most organizations, but I'll give you an example of that within Philips. So I uncovered that actually in Philips, we have what they call primary costs and secondary costs. And primary costs are actual dollars that you would spend with a third party. And that's what my budget is based on. And secondary costs are based on internal recharges if you use resources in other departments. So when we were redeveloping our EVP last year, 2 years ago, yes, like 2016, we could have gone out and spent, you know, 100K with some of the great employer branding agencies out there, which I didn't have that money. So we partnered with Philips design team. We have an in-house design team that actually operates as a consulting firm, and they do internal recharges of their time. So for them, it was, okay, here's your scope of work proposal, similar to how we work with external agencies. But I learned that actually didn't impact my primary budget. So in a lot of ways, I've been kind of leveraging this to my advantage of tapping into internal resources, knowing that at the end of the day, it doesn't hit my actual primary budget. So it's just one example, but I would say the more you can learn and navigate around that, the better you'll be. And then the third part I would say is leverage technology to cut costs in some tactical execution areas. So last year at this time, I did have that example, as I mentioned, where it was like, oh, do what you do, you know, but we're cutting your budget 40%. So figure that out on a global scale. And it forced me to kind of look at where is our spend happening and almost kind of duplicate spend happening, you know, around the world in all these geographies. And what I found is we're expending a ton of money on, you know, pretty low complexity tactical creative work that we were farming out to a number of smaller agencies around the world. And so we were able to implement Paperfly, which is a technology that gives my team access to do a lot of that work themselves. And not only did it help me with my budget, it also helped us increase speed of delivery and efficiency. So, you know, if it's just a matter of changing a couple of visuals in a banner, we don't have to wait 3 days. You know, my team can actually go in, make the changes themselves. It goes through a brand approval process, and then they're out to market. So that's just one example, but there are definitely technologies out there now that can help you, get more from less.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, in terms of technologies and employer brand, Paperfly is one which is good, I believe. I haven't used it myself, but I've seen a demo.
Yeah,
and I think we could do with a bit more innovation in this space. There's a lot of duplication of work happening, and try to run more effective processes, I think, especially on a global basis. So, yeah, anyone listening to this, please innovate more. Right.
Please. And I'm happy to be an input customer, point of customer feedback for you.
Yeah, absolutely, for a free license. Okay, what's up next for Employer Brand, in your opinion?
Yeah, I'd say everything. I think it's such an exciting time to be part of this space. I've seen it evolve from the days of, you know, running classified ads in the local newspaper to what it is today, which is a highly strategic and in focus profession. So as a result of that, I see, you know, an increasing amount of educational resources available for employees or practitioners who either are in the space today or want to grow into the space. I see access to better technologies, better strategic frameworks to help professionalize the work that we do. AI-backed technologies, content marketing tools, things that are true kind of best-in-class B2C e-commerce assets that are coming into our space. I think will be a bigger part of the organization design. So right now, you know, very much the discussions are employer brand and talent acquisition, or employer brand and the corporate brand and marketing team. And I think you'll start to see employer brand as part of the total, you know, whether it's talent development and talent acquisition, you know, part of the total HR suite. And I think that's only going to keep giving us those better opportunities for our voice to be heard. And I think we'll start to see the shift. It will actually already have started to see the shift from, you know, the companies who have an employer branding capability being ahead of the others. And that pendulum is definitely shifted to those who don't have our skill set being behind and having it be kind of a non-negotiable versus having to fight for those resources. So I think it's an exciting time. And I see communities of practitioners popping up everywhere. So, you know, the Facebook group, which I think put us in touch, where the crowdsourcing abilities have become so much more available. This is also a big way to cut costs, by the way. When you have a question, put it out to the group and you'll probably get equal or more valuable insights than kind of formal research. But it's great. There's really a community starting to arise within the employer branding space. So it's a really nice time to be a part of it.
Yes, absolutely. And we should name check this Facebook group. It was recently changed from employment branding to employer brand community. Yes. Is it?
Yes. I think you're correct.
Yeah, I think you'll find it if you just search for groups and employer.
And there's also another one, Transform Recruitment Marketing, that I'm a part of. Those two are kind of the good ones.
And actually, Talent Brand is another good one, and HROS when we're into this. So who inspires you and why? If you could talk about maybe perhaps one brand and one person.
I think people are brands, so I'm going to stick with two people.
Okay.
One's kind of a brand in and of himself. So I would say Richard Branson has always been someone that I've been inspired by, and he obviously is linked to the Virgin brand, which I love following their work. So there's the brand piece. I think Richard Branson, he's just found a way to be super successful while doing good in the world. You know, you read a lot of his content and it just feels very humble and human. And just the fact that he's been able to stay grounded as a person while keeping his priorities very clear throughout his career has been something that I've just not been very kind of compelled to follow. I've personally tried to implement some of his practices and shared advice in my own daily routine. Some days it's easier than others, but clearly he has a formula that works. So I would say he's definitely one. He's actually also a subtle advocate in our space. For those who haven't seen the Virgin Media case study on the topic of candidate experience, it's a great read. So I would definitely recommend it. And we had done some similar work around the same time at Philips in terms of how we measure the commercial impact of candidate experience. So nice to see that he and his group are leading the way in that area as well. And secondly, I would say Brené Brown. Brené is a research professor. She's also the author on topics of courage, bravery, and vulnerability. And I was actually recently introduced to her work through a women's leadership group that I'm part of. And I find a lot of her messages about knowing your self-worth and not being willing to negotiate on that very inspiring and particularly useful in our space as I mentioned, it's one where you can kind of have to have your own, be your own advocate to get your voice heard. So she has, in a way, kind of scientifically identified the value of vulnerability in relationship building, and talks a lot about the opportunities that you can realize when you have a fear about something, but you do it anyway, you know, kind of as the definition of courage. So I find her books and interviews really empowering for me as I continue to encounter and manage challenges, both, you know, in my work life and outside of work in general.
Is she the author of Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway? Because there's a book called that, I'm sure.
Yeah. And she has a whole series kind of from the path.
I think I read that. That was really inspirational. And I should also mention around Richard Branson that on this podcast, I interviewed Virgin Media last year and Virgin Group only a couple of weeks ago. So check those resources out. Right. Final question for you, Lisa. Where can people connect with yourself and learn more about Philips Employer Brand?
So people are welcome to connect with me on LinkedIn. I have a little bit of a dual identity at the moment. I'm managing through my premarital and postmarital name. So on Facebook, I'm Lisa Colella. On LinkedIn, I'm Lisa Chartier. So we need to figure that out. But definitely LinkedIn's the best way to get in touch with me now. Happy to share more. I will say, though, if you do connect with me on LinkedIn, just give me a little bit of an intro, please. One of my pet peeves is when, you know, you get the random request with no context. So introduce yourself. Tell me what you're all about.
Just mention you heard Lisa's insightful tips on this podcast.
Exactly.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Jorgen. Have a great day.
All right, I hope that was useful. Everything that Lisa and I discussed will, of course, be in a show notes article, which you'll be able to find at employerbrandingpodcast.com. Okay, last chance saloon. Link Humans has teamed up with the Employer Branding Academy to deliver what I believe is the best employer brand course, of course, and qualification available. Here in the Royal Capital, that is London, we will host the kickoff at the brand new Facebook offices on the 17th of April. So over this 8-week course, you'll learn from dozens of real life business cases from leading companies. You'll equip yourselves with skills, tools and knowledge to deal with any employer brand challenge you could ever imagine. And of course, Facebook will present their approach to culture and purpose, as well as giving you a nice office tour on the 17th. Now, tickets are flying off the shelves. They are selling like hotcakes. There are only a handful of seats left right now. So if you're interested, please let me know ASAP. My email is jorgen@linkhumans.com, or you'll find me on Twitter and LinkedIn and other places. Also, I'll put the links in the description of this particular episode. That's it for this week. Thank you very much for tuning in, and I look forward to catching up with you next week. Hey, no!
Why is it so easy to trick Dracula on Halloween?
No idea.
Because he's a sucker.